honestly, if you have good information in your mind, then it gives you that opportunity when you're having conversations with your provider to be able to trust your intuition. If you're like me, like I get in the doctor's office and I kind of like clam up, like even though I know all of these things. And I find as I'm older now and I've had some babies, I've definitely found my voice along the way, but especially earlier on. And even still now, I feel like fight or flight when I'm dealing with a provider, depending on what kind of conversation we're having about my care.
Getting pregnant and giving birth are two of the most exciting things you can ever hope to experience in this life. The moment you think you could be pregnant, you're frantically searching for all the best information, which is why you're here today. I'm Stephanie King, and with my many years of experience as a professional childbirth educator, doula, and lover of all things pregnancy, birth, and postpartum, I'm here to make preparing for your birth enjoyable, empowering, and totally easy. Each week, I'll cover different topics, interview professionals, and get into the nitty-gritty birth stories from mamas just like you. And when you're ready for more, you can join me in the My Essential Birth course at myessentialbirth.com, where I take you step by step through exactly how to prepare your mind, body, spirit, and partner for a birth you love. So let's get started. It's time. The My Essential Birth postpartum course is here. Whether you're pregnant, just got baby home, or weeks and months into postpartum, this is the course for you. No more wondering what's normal for your body postpartum, if baby's eating or pooping enough, or how to get a good latch. You now have an all-in-one resource where you can click a topic and get the answer. Learn more at myessentialbirth.com/postpartum and add it onto the My Essential Birth course for even less when you bundle them at checkout. Already in the course? Check your student library and add the course for the same discount. I can't wait to support you on your postpartum journey. Welcome, welcome to this week's podcast. And I'm going to get you started with that reviewer of the week. This one comes from Kai Hanks, and she says, life-changing. Forever grateful to the friend who led me to this podcast and birth course. Thank you, friend. I'm going to thank her too. I didn't realize how much there is to learn about pregnancy, birth, and life transitioning into motherhood. This is my first baby, and I've listened to this series from episode 1 to present. To say these ladies have helped me feel prepared is an understatement. Between this podcast, the birth course, and all of the resources, I feel educated, empowered, encouraged, and overall excited for this experience in my life. Now, I share this with every pregnant mama I know, hoping it'll change her life too. Thank you, Stephanie, for being a friend on this journey. Thank you for that awesome review. And I can't wait to get a little bit more into today's topic. This week, I wanted to go a little bit more in depth about the ARRIVE trial. So for those of you who have been encouraged to have induction, encouraged to schedule an induction around your 39-week mark or shortly thereafter, maybe at your 39-week appointment or an earlier one for 39 weeks, this ARRIVE trial is the one that providers are leaning on and using as a reason to induce moms and to tell moms, and maybe this has been your experience, to tell you that this, because of this trial, we're finding that it's actually safer to induce at 39 weeks, or that this is an evidence-based good practice. Now, again, I don't know what it was about 2020. I don't know if it was just like this trial like eventually like caught up with the chaos of 2020 or what it was, but I certainly noticed, and I know other birth workers did as well, that this trial during that time and inductions were pushed so much more than I had ever seen it done. And so it kind of warranted a podcast episode. Dang it, so that we can talk about the details behind it so that you know what you're up against. Because if you have somebody coming to you and saying, a provider who you know and who you trust, saying to you, well, they've done these studies and this is actually the best way to go and that we're encouraging these things, you need to have the information in order to make a decision based off of that recommendation.
So today I'm going to break it down for you. It's kind of going to be detail heavy, like in the ways of percentages and what was done within the trial and things like that. However, I'm also going to go over kind of the idea behind whether or not, like what that looks like for you and your birth, whether or not this is a good decision for you, whether or not it's evidence-based. All of that is kind of what I'm going to cover today. So I want to talk about what the ARRIVE trial is. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about who participated, what that participation group looked like, and what they were looking at within that group, what they found, so what the studiers came to find. And this was a big group. It was a big study. It was a big trial. So that's why this is like such a thing that providers are leaning on. But I want to talk to you about those findings. And again, we're going to getting into like statistics and details and stuff like that. Kind of the end of it, like what experts are saying and what is being recommended, including what ACOG states about it. And then should all moms be offered an elective induction at 39 weeks? And I'll get into that. All of that is kind of going to be what I go over today in regards to the ARRIVE trial. So first off, what is it? Again, maybe you haven't heard of this yet, and so we're just going to make it really simple. It is a trial that was done. It was a study done by the New England Journal of Medicine, and it stands for a randomized trial of induction versus expectant management. So induction, obviously, being that we use some techniques, some medical ways to get a mom's body going into labor early before it does it on its own, versus expectant management, where you wait and see. It's that wait and see approach, trusting the body, the intuition, trusting that your body is going to go into labor on its own. The primary purpose behind it was that they wanted to figure out if elective induction during the 39th week of pregnancy, and for the sake of the trial, it was 39 weeks, 0 days to 39 weeks plus four, or 39 weeks and 4 days, to see if that would result in a lower death and serious complication rate for babies compared to waiting till at least 40 weeks and 5 days for elective induction. The secondary purpose was to see if inductions led to more cesareans, which is definitely an important topic for conversation. So let's talk about the participants. The participation spanned across 41 states. Researchers screened 50,581 moms. This had to be their first pregnancy with a baby that was head down, and it had to be uncomplicated. So this isn't somebody with gestational diabetes or somebody who's seeing a maternal fetal medicine doctor. Low risk, healthy, first time mom. All moms had a Bishop score of greater than 5. And if you've heard me talk about Bishop's scores before, this is what is a good gauge of if your body is favorable or not favorable for induction. And they actually say that scores 6 and higher are favorable. But in this case, I guess they're going to go with a 5, meaning they think maybe it's an average or something like that. But basically, it's based off of how dilated is mom, how effaced is mom, what the position of the baby is, what the position of the cervix. They're taking all of that stuff into account, and they give you a score. And that score tells you, if we start induction, it is likely to kick things off and get mom into an actual labor pattern, and we're going to see a baby, or we're going to have to do a lot of mechanical things, a lot of medical things in order to ripen the cervix, dilate the cervix, really prepare the body. And oftentimes when we are talking about less favorable for induction, you're looking at a lot more intervention and likely a cesarean birth, or a greater chance of a cesarean birth. So that's all involved with the Bishop score. So out of the 50,000 plus that were screened, 22,533 were eligible, and 6,106 agreed to participate. So randomly assigned moms went to two groups. 3,062 people went to the electively induced group for the 39th week, and 3,044 people decided to go, or they went to randomly, right? Were put in the expectant management group. So they randomly assigned, basically half of the group would be induced at 39 weeks, and half of the group would wait for labor to start on its own. Out of all those groups, 94% of the women were seeing obstetricians, and the other 6% were seeing midwives for their care. So that's all information about the participants. Now let's talk about what they found. Remember that the primary focus, which was the risk of serious complication for death for newborns, that was their like main thing that they were looking at. That occurred in 4.3% of the babies in the induction group. It occurred in 5.4% of babies in the expectant management group. Newborns in the induction group had a shorter duration of respiratory support and of total hospital stay. The secondary focus was for cesarean rate. So 18.6% of moms who were in the induction group ended up with a cesarean birth versus 22.2% for the moms that were in the expectant management group. Now, data suggests that among low-risk women, every 1 out of 28 cesarean births may be avoided with elective inductions at 39 weeks. Going off of this study, that's the data that was pulled for that. Now, I want to take a minute to talk about this here because this is important. The parameters for this study were first-time moms that were low-risk. Then they were put into those two groups. That's the information that was given. Out of these moms, do we know how many of them in that expectant management group or the induction group, how many of them took a birth class, were prepared and practiced things like relaxation practice or did labor rehearsals, meditation, understood how the body works and what's happening during the labor process? How many were given tools to be able to utilize during that process, such as peanut balls or birth balls or being encouraged to walk around during labor, use water, have warm towels given to them, counter pressure, all of that stuff that we know encourages mom to be able to go on with her labor longer and stronger and have better birth outcomes. How many of them had a doula? Not to mention how many of them felt good about their experience and how they were treated throughout the labor process, throughout the pregnancy process, and also postpartum. So all of that is not played into here. And so when you are an educated mom, when you're coming from a really solid knowledge base of understanding how your body works and you're really interested in having a certain kind of birth in the way of maybe leave me alone, less intervention, even in the way of I just want to ensure that I don't have a cesarean if at all possible, that is my main goal. But the way that you're educating yourself is like listening to this podcast and doing your exercises. And even if you're planning for an epidural or some kind of medication, you're aware that if you get it a little later into the labor game, so if you show up at your birthplace a little bit later because you've been able to work through some of those contractions before just going straight for the epidural, that you are increasing your chances of less intervention and a less chance of cesarean. When you come to it, when you approach it from that place, all of a sudden, this study is good information, but it may not even apply to your specific situation, even if you are a first-time mom who is low risk. It's not going to encompass all of that. So I think that's really important to include, and I'm going to stick it right there, although I'm probably going to come back to that and remind you towards the end of the episode. So those were their two focuses, right? Like safety of baby, and then also like, so how many babies died? And then also that cesarean rate. And the cesarean rate, especially cesarean rate and safety of baby, but those two things are the main things that were the focus in this trial. It's also the thing that is touted by obstetricians or providers encouraging induction at 39 weeks when they're falling back on this trial. So that is where the information came from. That's information for you to have. The other thing I'm going to do with this episode is I'm going to include the link to the actual trial. It's a lot to read, but in my opinion, it's totally worth it. In fact, I actually kind of gobbled this stuff up a ton when I was pregnant. Like I loved reading this and having that information in the back of my mind. Honestly, if you have good information in your mind, then it gives you that opportunity when you're having conversations with your provider to be able to trust your intuition. If you're like me, like I get in the doctor's office and I kind of like clam up, like even though I know all of these things. And I find as I'm older now and I've had some babies, I've definitely found my voice along the way, but especially earlier on. And even still now, I feel like fight or flight when I'm dealing with a provider, depending on what kind of conversation we're having about my care. So, or my children's care, right? I think it like immediately goes into motherhood. So there's all that information. Now let's keep moving on. This is more of what they found. They found that moms in the induction group reported, quote, less pain on the 10-point scale, and they reported more perceived control during birth, meaning higher scores on the labor agentry scale. So in other words, they felt like they had more control. This is what was reported over the situation. But again, if you are taking a birth class, you're preparing your body, you're preparing your mind, are you going to feel that way on your way in. Here's the thing. This is what is a little frustrating to me. If a mom is planning on getting an epidural, excellent, wonderful. I totally agree with however mom is deciding to do her labor, that we should support that. The thing that providers don't tell you, they don't tell a mom that's planning to have an epidural, is you still have to have labor contractions. Nobody prepares her for that. And that's pretty unfair. So the second she is feeling contractions, she's like, oh, shoot, let's get to the hospital because I don't want to feel this. That wasn't part of the plan. Like, I need an epidural. I don't want to go through labor. And that is a little bit unfair. So yeah, a group that's going to have less pain, if you're talking about induction, especially when you start things medically at the beginning, and then we start having a little bit of contraction, and you're introduced to an epidural really early on, then yes, those people would experience less pain and control. They'd experience more control because they are being told along the way what to expect as they go. So I think knowing what to expect in labor, in pregnancy, in labor and postpartum, that is going to be the thing that makes you feel like you have control and provide less pain. In fact, we know a lot of unmedicated moms that give birth and they don't describe it as pain. They describe it as intensity and pressure and waves, right? And there's a reason behind that. And a lot of that has to do with the preparation before. It is just as much mental as it is physical. Now, moms in the induction group spent more time in the labor and delivery unit, but the length of their postpartum hospital stay was actually shorter. And then the average birth weight was 7 pounds, 4 ounces for moms who were induced versus 7 pounds, 7 ounces for moms who were part of that expectant management, which would be expected because we all know that first time moms have an average of 41 weeks and 1 day before they go into labor. That is the average for a first time mom. And so obviously their babies are going to be a little bit bigger because those last couple of weeks, baby grows 1 pound a week. So that is totally normal. We would expect that. Now, what do the experts say? So the study concludes with, quote, "We found that elective labor induction at 39 weeks of gestation did not result in a greater frequency of perinatal adverse outcomes than expectant management and resulted in fewer instances of cesarean delivery. These results suggest that policies aimed at the avoidance of elective labor induction among low-risk nulliparous women at 39 weeks of gestation are unlikely to reduce the rate of cesarean delivery on a population level." So that is one way to look at that. Obviously, with a study like this, you're looking at numbers, and that is a reasonable conclusion. There are other things to factor into that, but as far as this study goes, that is what they're looking at. There are other things involved, as I said before, but that is what that study concludes. Also, nulliparous means when a woman has never given birth before. So that is a first-time mom with a baby full term. Now, ACOG states, quote, "It is reasonable for obstetricians and healthcare facilities to offer elective induction of labor to low-risk nulliparous women at 39 weeks gestation. However, consideration for enactment of this elective induction of labor intervention should not only take into account the trial findings, but that this recommendation may be conditional upon the values and preferences of the pregnant woman, the resources available, including personnel, and the setting in which the intervention will be implemented. A collaborative discussion with shared decision-making should take place with the pregnant woman. Additionally, as induction of labor involves coordination between the healthcare provider and the infrastructure in which induction and delivery will occur, it is critical that personnel and facilities coordinate policies related to the offering of elective induction in labor." So a much more gentler approach than probably what is being offered to you in your provider's office. And I do appreciate that they are taking into consideration how the mom feels. Does it follow her values? Does it follow her birth plan and what she would like? Having this as an option is one thing. Feeling coerced into it because of pressure from a medical provider is completely different. So that's why I'm sharing this information with you, so you don't have to have that experience. Now, kind of to that question of, so should all moms be offered an elective induction at 39 weeks? Should they be offered? Should it be a topic of conversation? Hey, by the way, if you'd like. And that could be a tricky spot too, because by 39 weeks, you're like, get out, baby. Where's the eject button, right? And so having some of that information or like that recommendation in your head can be a little like, ugh, maybe I do want you out right now. That would be great. Let's meet you, you know? But let's be real about this. First of all, Your due date is a guest date as at best, right? We all know that due dates are not, it's time to get out dates. Due dates are, we predict you will be done baking at around this time so that I can prepare mentally for my body going into labor and prepare for you to be here around this time. It is a guest date at best. Remember that the average pregnancy for first-time moms is 41 weeks plus one day. That is an average. That means there are women that will go far past this and will give birth far below this, anywhere from 38 to 43 weeks. That average, 41 plus one, right? There is definitely benefits for baby staying in mom's belly. And we can go over things like Vernix and like simple things like that. But there's also lung development and hormones that are happening for both mom and baby. You know, breast milk that's being made, circulatory things that are happening for baby. There's a lot of things going on that we don't see. And it is certainly a natural process. It is not an emergency or something that necessarily needs to be managed. So I think when we start meddling with that, with what our bodies are capable of doing, created to do, able to do on their own, then we can experience some adverse outcomes to that, including how we feel about it, which is a really important part of birth that maybe is not being considered so much in the medical realm when they're offering those kinds of things. Keep in mind that with inductions do come interventions. Now, of course, the studies show that even with the induction group versus that expectant management group, that induction actually showed a less percentage of cesareans. However, I'm going to remind you here that those were not necessarily women who were prepared for labor, knew the process, knew how to work through it, had support, all of that kind of stuff. So keep that in mind. Now, what's interesting with this study is the cesarean rates for the study involved were at 19%. Actual C-section rates across the nation, at least here in the United States, is 33%. And that is something to consider. The other thing is, and I'm not going to go over all of the details of this, and it's within the study if you'd like to read it, but how they did the induction was specific. And so even how your provider is offering to induce you, what methods they're offering to use, have they taken your Bishop score into account? Are they following the methods and practices and timings of induction that were followed specifically within this study? Are they following those? Because that obviously would have a part in how the induction process goes for you in relation to how it was done to the study. So that's something to consider as well. And then keep in mind that if you are concerned about, or you kind of know, like, I don't want things like Pitocin or a lot of monitoring or things like that, then maybe induction is not for you. That might be something to kind of keep in the back of your mind. Even if you're like, I don't want an IV, well, then obviously, you know, induction is probably not for you. Some inductions can be successful and not use Pitocin. You'll still likely have to have the monitoring and the IV and all that kind of stuff. But once you get started with something like a cervical ripener, like Cervidil or a Foley bulb or something that helps open, soften the cervix, then you can have contractions on your own from that point and get things started even without the use of something like Pitocin that augments labor in the way of creating contractions. Obviously, on a more natural side of things where you don't necessarily need a medical provider to be able to start contractions, that can be something like castor oil. Separate conversation. I wouldn't necessarily call that induction, although it can kickstart things. So natural form of induction would be the way to go on that one. But the other thing too is once you start that induction, oftentimes what is offered or an intervention that is offered is breaking the bag of waters. That's kind of a thing of like, depending on how Pitocin is going, depending on how the contractions are doing, it's like, well, if we break these bag of waters, you know, maybe your baby's up a little higher, they'll just come right down and things will get moving. And well, that may or may not be true. Baby may or may not come down. Contractions may or may not get bigger, longer, stronger, closer together. And then you're kind of put on that time clock. So again, kind of information for you to have in the way of induction. The other thing is once you start induction, there's no stopping it. So yes, in the way of something like Pitocin, you can turn it off. But once you have started the process of inducing a labor in a medical facility, it's not like this induction didn't work. Go ahead and head home and we'll see you next week. It's now we're going to be meeting your baby. So all of that is stuff to kind of keep in mind. Now, hopefully overall, what I wanted you guys to get from this episode was the details behind the ARRIVE trial. And so definitely check this blog post that we're going to put up in regards to this episode. I'll make sure, even if you're looking at this on Apple Podcasts or wherever, that it's in the links right below where the episode is. I'm going to include links to the ARRIVE trial, but I want you to check out the blog post episode because it's going to highlight those key points for you so that you have talking points for yourself to review, but talking points for you to be able to speak with your provider and have a really informed conversation with them. I hope it did, even as you were listening today, I hope it's going to bring in some of that like side information that is not being discussed when a provider offers something like this, in the way of those were the parameters of the study, and it didn't take into account preparation of mom and what she knows about birth and how her support is and how she set herself up with her provider and all of that kind of stuff. Because 100%, that is very, very, very important and something that they did not take into account as far as this trial goes. This was a very interesting trial. It included numbers and statistics and all of that good stuff. It was really fun to read. I'm sure it was interesting to do and watch the outcomes. But again, it doesn't take into all of that. And so that is part of why I felt this episode was so necessary. Now, the other side of that is, if you haven't already and you're looking for that kind of support, that kind of where I can hold your hand and walk you through each step of birth, of the pregnancy process and what you can expect, questions that you need to ask your provider for the birth that you want to have, complications that can arise, how your body works through each stage of labor and how you can work with it, how your birth partner is able to support you, meditation practices, labor rehearsals, all of that kind of stuff through postpartum, then come join me in the birth course, myessentialbirth.com/get-started. And other than that, if you guys have questions, anything that comes up, maybe you've even been having this conversation with your provider and you're just not sure kind of how to like bridge the gap there, reach out. hello@myessentialbirth.com, or I'm on Instagram @myessentialbirth. I love connecting with you guys. So if you have a chance and you want to do that, definitely reach out. But I hope this episode was helpful and I can't wait to see you guys next week. If you loved what you heard today, the very best way to support this podcast and help other moms to find it is to leave a quick review. I read one at the beginning of the episodes, and I would love for yours to be next. And if you're ready for even more pregnancy, birth, and postpartum goodness, come join me in the My Essential Birth course at myessentialbirth.com, where I will hold your hand and walk you through pregnancy and birth step by step so you're totally prepared for a birth you'll love. See you next week.